You're back with Carrie at Natural Moms Talk Radio. And this week I'm honored to be joined by a very special guest, Jan Hunt, who is the author of The Natural Child, Parenting from the Heart. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is a real treat. I think most of our listeners have probably heard of you and your book and your site, The Natural Child. Now, you're the director of the Natural Child Project and also an editorial assistant of Empathic Parenting. So that gives us an idea of what you're all about. And I think that your book is required reading.
Thank you very much.
For all new parents. It's really great. I enjoyed it so much. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about what made you decide when you had, you know, your son, your young son, to embrace this style of parenting? What influenced you?
A lot of things. We didn't know very much about parenting. I have only an older brother. I didn't have younger siblings. Didn't do very much babysitting. And I was pretty naive about child care. And I remember thinking when I was pregnant that how scary it was to think that I would have to use punishment, because that was kind of a given in our society, and knowing at the same time that I wouldn't want to do that. But I didn't know what else to do. And then I was very lucky to find the book The Family Bed by Tina Thevenin. And when I read the first chapter, really that's all it took was the first chapter, it completely turned my thinking around. It reassured me that I could follow my heart and that would be the best thing for my child. It was such a relief to realize that. And to realize that I didn't have to use punishment and that I wouldn't be a wimp for not using punishment. In fact, I would be doing the very best thing for him. And that chapter made such a huge difference for me and for my husband that we've put that up on our website, that first chapter. So that was the first influence that we had. And then I heard about the La Leche League, eventually got into going to La Leche League meetings when Jason was just over a year old. They were surprised that we were still nursing without their help. And I never did become a league leader, but I attended probably 50 meetings at least, and that was extremely helpful. They covered not only everything about breastfeeding, but they also were very reassuring about this type of empathic parenting.
Mm. Well, you don't hear that phrase empathic parenting that much anymore. I used to hear it a lot several years ago, but mostly you hear about attachment parenting nowadays. And, you know, it's definitely a good thing that there are organizations like, you know, Attachment Parenting International and like you said, La Leche League, because there's a place for parents who, you know, instinctively felt that they wanted to raise their children like this, to find other parents that, you know, have the same beliefs.
Yes. Yes, it's very, very helpful to have that kind of support, because it isn't in our society.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, for most of human existence, we lived in a community of people, all of whom knew our child from birth and could give us the kind of support that we needed if we were tired or just wanted a break. There were people around who would have also been attached to our child. And now we've gone about as far from that as we can, where we're living in very isolated situations, and often moms are home with their children without any support at all. They often live miles from their own parents, or even if the parents are nearby, they may not have the same approach. So I'm always recommending support groups to my clients, to La Leche League, Holistic Moms Network, API, like that. And if there isn't one locally, I always encourage them to consider starting one of their own. And some of my clients have been really surprised when they did that, thinking that they pretty much knew their community and didn't think there would be like-minded people around. But when they advertised the meetings, they were amazed to see who showed up. So there really are supportive people, maybe closer than we think.
Yeah, they tend to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Well, your book raises what I think is such an important question, and that is, why is it that as a society we think that children are so very, very different from adults? And what that means is, why do we think that the way to help children, you know, behave better is by making them feel terrible? You know, how would an adult feel if they were shamed or screamed at or, you know, hit, et cetera? Why do we think that way in our culture? Have you come to any conclusions about that?
It's really difficult to know exactly how that started. I think probably the best resource for that would be Robin Grill's book, Parenting for a Peaceful World.
Mm-hmm.
We carry that in our shop on our website. And he has done an enormous amount of research into just that question and really covered the ground as well as anyone. I think you've already interviewed Robin about his book. There are just so many factors. There's not just one factor. There's just so many factors about how do we come upon such a philosophy, and where does it really start? There's just so many different routes that has taken. And I'm encouraged, though, because there are so many, there are just more and more people who are becoming aware of this, age old philosophy of treating children like the human beings that they are. And I think this is growing. The more we have, the more we talk about it, the more books there are about it. And, of course, the Internet has been a huge influence, I think, for helping people to realize that there are other approaches that they can take. So it's sad, you know, if you look at it from one perspective and think how far we've come from the ideal way of looking at children. But at the same time, I'm encouraged that I think we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so. Now, Dan, you offer parenting coaching. What does that look like? What is your typical client who calls you? What kind of questions do they have? And what does a coaching session look like?
Okay. Well, it's usually set up through our website. I have a counseling page there at naturalchild.org. And it's nearly always by telephone. Occasionally, for various reasons, I'll do an email session. I prefer telephone just because I can cover so much more in the same amount of time. And I'm not sure if there really is a typical situation, but many of my clients are young mothers with small children. And they know that they want to do something different about a certain type of behavior that's happening. They want to understand it better. They want to look at it from the child's point of view. They want alternatives to punishment, but they just don't know what that would look like. And so usually it's about an hour, and I'll have the person explain to me what's going on and what they've already tried, and then I'll do what I can to help them look at it from the child's point of view, to encourage them to have compassion for the child and give them some real practical advice. I'm much more practical than theoretical in my counseling sessions. I give lots of suggestions of ways that they can respond to particular kinds of behaviors.
Do you think that sometimes parents make it harder than it needs to be because they're trying so hard to do things right and by the book instead of really listening to that voice within?
Yes, oh, definitely. Not intentionally, of course, but whenever a parent responds to a child in a less than compassionate way, it's going to make things worse. And so you can get into what I call a downward spiral. And the good news is, as I tell my clients, that you can just as easily set up an upward spiral where you start to listen really, you know, with an open heart, with compassion. The child will pick up on that immediately and will respond in kind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as dire as it seems. And usually it just takes about an hour for the parent to start to realize that it's not going to be such a difficult process after all. It's not going to take them years to turn around their philosophy or their thinking or to gain the kind of knowledge that they might need. We all have the knowledge. It's in our heart. We know how much we love our child. And if we can go from there, if we can use that as the starting point, then we can go on to this, you know, more encouraging, more positive relationship.
Yes, that's so very true. And we've all been children. And if we just think for a moment about what it felt like to be a child,
mm-hmm.
I know that for me personally, I remember just being so frustrated with myself because I was clumsy and would spill things all the time. And the funny thing is, in my family, I break more dishes than any of my children ever do. I'm still a clutch.
I know the feeling.
But I've never... shamed a child or punished a child because they broke something. And I think it's because I so keenly remember my own shame about that. And interestingly, my parents did not, shame me for breaking things or spilling things. But that was coming from inside of me.
Mm-hmm. So not necessarily inside of you or not only that, but it's also in our culture. You know, the belief that we have about parenting and the belief that a child may have about their own character may not come from the parents. It may come from a TV show or a movie or something they overheard a neighbor say. You know, that's one thing that I always try to establish in my sessions is that the parents don't need to carry everything on their shoulders. That they don't need to feel that they're completely responsible for something that isn't going very well. It's so much of the harm that comes in families is really because we're immersed in a culture that really doesn't trust children and doesn't look at children as human beings. And we can take that on ourselves, or our children can hear it or be criticized by someone else. You know, there's all of those factors. But the more a parent can do to alleviate that, the better.
Yeah.
So, and I've just actually came across an article. I'm going to try to get permission for it for our website. And the parent was talking about do-overs,
mm-hmm.
That she was trying to establish for herself a way to undo some of the mistakes that she makes with her children. And one of the examples she used was spilling, that she became quite upset when her daughter spilled a cup of juice. And she caught herself afterwards, and after not being very, very helpful with it, she caught herself and said, okay, I want a do-over. And she gave her another cup and said, spill this. You know? And I really like that. I like the idea that parents don't have to be don't have to live with mistakes, forever. They can ask the child to undo something, to be creative and imaginative and fun ways of making amends and of letting the child know that you're not happy with your own responses.
Yeah.
And this is something very, very different, of course, from previous generations where parents felt that they had to be the authority, that they couldn't show any kind of weakness to the child.
Right.
But this is going the other way. There's another website called Playful Parenting, which gets into this kind of playful attitude that,
mm-hmm.
that children who are so always playing, it's so wonderful, and they can really respond to playfulness on the part of the parent.
Yeah, parenting is so important, but it doesn't have to be serious all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Dan, you have a new book that's coming out shortly, The Unschooling Unmanual.
Yes.
Tell us more about that.
Yes, I'm really excited about this. This is actually a compilation book, and most of it was written by a woman in Europe. She lives in Holland, and it's wonderful wonderful writing. It's just very, very clear. She really knows exactly the right approach to take to all of the typical questions that people have about unschooling. That will be the majority of the book. And it will also include two chapters from Rue Cream's wonderful book, Parenting a Pre-Child, and two or three of my own articles. And we're hoping to have this out by the end of July.
Oh, that sounds fun. And tell us about a little bit more about your other book, too, A Gift for Baby.
A Gift for Baby is a children's picture book. It's my idea was to write a book that would give the same messages as my parenting book, as The Natural Child, but for the next generation. So to try to reach future parents while they're still children, or as early as possible. And it's a fun picture book. I was very fortunate to find a wonderful illustrator. The book took me about 5 minutes to write. I was taking a shower and the whole book just kind of popped into my mind. And it took me about 5 years to find the right illustrator. So I found Sunny Rosenbaum, who did a really beautiful job.
Yeah.
And it's a fun children's picture book. It has a kind of a twist ending to it. And at the same time, it also illustrates all of the kinds of parenting recommendations that I make. Holding and nursing and all of the attachment parenting recommendations are shown in that, in the illustrations.
Well, one of my favorite things about your book, The Natural Child, is the article about the hidden messages that we give our children. And to me, it's so clear, you know, the connection that you've made here between various behaviors that come up and the responses of the parent and what the child is picking up about that, you know, what the child is thinking, how they're perceiving that situation, and then the problem that we've created for ourselves when that child is a teenager or an adult.
Yes.
And so for our audience that has not read the book, do you want to explain a little bit more about that?
Yes, that's interesting. That one article was one that I didn't really care for that much, but I've had so much feedback on. And apparently it has really reached a lot of people, which is wonderful. And I was just trying to get across that children, that everything a child does, they do for a reason. And the reason in almost every case is that they have an unmet need. And one of the examples that I use in my counseling is the emotional tank. This was in a parenting book that I read some years ago, and the author was comparing children to cars, and he said that if we jump into our car and we want to go 100 miles, but we notice that we're almost out of gas, you know, we don't get mad at the car, we don't just get upset, we just realize that the car has a need that needs to be met, and we go and get gas, and then we can go our 100 miles. And he was saying that, he was giving the analogy that a child is similar in that the child has an emotional tank, and if that emotional tank isn't filled, then they can't go their 100 miles.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is that what fills the emotional tank, unlike the car's tank, what fills the emotional tank doesn't cost anything. And the three things that he listed, which I agree, that filled that tank are eye contact, gentle touching, and undivided attention. And so if a parent is really unsure what's going on, the very least, at least what they can do is think, oh, this child has some unmet needs, and how can I help? I can give eye contact, gentle touching, and undivided attention. And after I read that book, I started doing that beforehand. I started doing that in the very beginning of the day and just before I was about to make dinner, so that Jason could go his 100 miles, you know, instead of having to stop every 5 miles and put in another tank, another gallon of gas, you know,
yeah,
instead of having to try to catch up all day long. That can be exhausting, where the child feels less and less that their needs are being met. They're wondering if they're ever going to be met, so they get kind of frantic or they get clingy. And the parent is always trying to catch up, just like we would if we were giving the car just a gallon at a time. But if we fill up that emotional tank early first, then we can prevent. And prevention is where it's all at. That's what I'm always trying to help parents to do, is to prevent the kinds of behaviors that are challenging for them. It's just so much easier if it just never happens. Then they don't even have to think about punishment or no punishment or how to handle it, because it just won't happen.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, another thing I appreciated about your book was the section about advocating for children. It seems like every, I don't know, a few weeks or a few months on a parenting message forum, I'll see something like a parent asking, you know, I think I saw something inappropriate. You know, I think a child is being abused, or, you know, I saw something in the grocery store with his mother who was just, you know, mm-hmm. being very verbally abusive to a child, and what should I have done?
Yeah, exactly. It's a very common question. It kind of relates back to what I said earlier about the fact that we're no longer living in tribes and communities. We have strangers. You know, when we discover, when a Stone Age tribe is discovered, very often the anthropologist or whoever was visiting could be the very first stranger that those people had ever seen. And it seems so unusual and strange to us to hear that kind of story, but as I said before, for most of our existence, that's what we had. And we didn't have, there were no strangers. We all mm-hmm. knew each other ever since birth. And so we have to remember that this is a very, very recent kind of thing that we're doing here. And it's just very recent experiments and all the new kinds of things that are happening in our culture make it so difficult, because we don't know these people. And so it's very, very difficult to intervene when you see a stranger doing something that you don't approve of. It's very difficult to do that without possibly alienating her even further and causing her to be even harsher with her child. And at the same time, we know that this child deserves better treatment. And if we walk past, that's giving the message of acceptance and approval. And so it's a real dilemma. And I think our website is probably the only one that has several articles on this subject. And this is actually our next book. We're going to do a book or a booklet on standing up for children in public.
Well, so, I know for a fact that what you say here is true, that, you know, standing up for that child can have a very significant impact mm-hmm. on them, because I've known a couple of people mm-hmm. who are adults now who, you know, did suffer abusive treatment at the hands of their parents, and they said that the fact that there was one person in their life mm-hmm. who witnessed that and pointed it out, and yeah. you know, that enabled them to know, okay, this is not normal. This is not the way that families should be, even though it's what I've been used to my whole life. And that one experience, that one person, was like something they could hold on to.
Yes, it can make a huge, huge difference. And that's why I encourage people to intervene as best as they can, even if they might make a mistake, even if they antagonize the parent. It still will make a huge difference, can make a huge difference to that child. In fact, I have a friend who had a very, very difficult childhood, and she told me about an experience that she had when she was sitting in the back seat of the car. Her mom was in the front seat. They were parked in a shopping center parking lot. She doesn't remember what was happening with her mom, but she was crying in the back seat, and her mother was, she said, as usual, ignoring her crying. And would you believe that three teenage girls came by the car and started yelling at the mom
wow.
for ignoring her child. And even though that's not maybe the ideal kind of intervention, but it made such a huge, lifelong impression on my friend. She said it was the first time that she ever even considered that her mother was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She, until that moment, she was taking in her mother's blame and criticism internally.
Yes.
And thought that she was completely responsible for every problem they were having. And that just made a huge, huge difference. So yeah, it's, even if we do make mistakes, it can still have a very great benefit for the child. The book will, of course, try to help parents do this in the most kind way. And there's still lots of situations that I haven't figured out yet. Lots of times when I haven't intervened myself just because I can't think at the time. It's very difficult because it's a stressful situation.
Yeah.
And when we're stressed, we don't think very clearly.
Yeah.
And so that's in fact why we're wanting to write this. It will probably be just a little booklet that maybe people can carry with them with reminders or ideas about what they can say. That will be maybe the most tactful thing and the most helpful thing.
Oh, that's great. There's definitely a need for that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jan. And
you're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, your website is just a wealth of information. It's, you know, you could get lost for hours in there. And thank you, you know, again for sharing more information about your coaching and your upcoming book. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks very much for the invitation.